and welcome to My Psychotherapy Career, a podcast where we explore the different therapeutic settings our members work in and how they came into their career. I'm Jenna Rashid, the Digital Engagement Officer at UKCP. Our host, Helen Willingham, is the Head of Content and Engagement at UKCP, overseeing all our communications to members and the public, as well as our policy and research work. In this episode, Helen speaks to UKCP's psychotherapist, Tasha Bailey. Specialising in childhood wounds, healing and self-love, Tasha is an author, speaker and social media influencer. She has established herself as a mental health expert on social media, seeking to open up conversations around self-care and healing for people who can't access therapy. Working in private practice, with brands and on social media, Tasha has written a book entitled Real Talk, Lessons from Therapy on Healing and Self-Love, which seeks to give readers the reflective tools they need to start working on themselves. Tasha was named the Health and Wellbeing Creator of the Year in 2022 by the Be Creator Awards, a highly recognised achievement for influencers and content creators in the UK. In this episode, we speak to Tasha about her journey into the psychotherapy profession and what has led her into the world of social media, writing and advocating.
So I'd just like to say first, thank you very much for joining us today, Tasha. Really great to be speaking to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And my first point, so this is really talking about how you became a therapist, but you began your training in your mid-20s, which in this profession, we have to say, is quite young. What drew you to a career in psychotherapy early on?
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. So I wanted to be a therapist from a really young age, probably from age 15, something like that. And it's a strange one because I think most psychotherapists become psychotherapists as part of a second career, or it leads from one career to the next, whereas I kind of had this vision from quite a young age. And it literally came from, it's really silly, but it literally came from watching Nickelodeon. And there was a film called Harriet the Spy that used to come on quite a lot, that I'd watch a lot. And Harriet has this nanny who kind of brings her up most of her life. And then the nanny has to leave when she's 12 years old. And she goes into kind of feeling really sad and really difficult feelings and lots of loss and grief. So her parents sent her to a child psychotherapist. And that was my first real understanding of what therapy is. And I thought, that looks really cool, like, you know, using toys and games and arty things to help people communicate about their feelings. And that's kind of literally where the vision started. And to some degree, part of it was, oh, I wish I had that when I was younger as well. But yeah, it kind of very much fleshed out what I wanted for my career.
And do you think your view of psychotherapy has changed from that starting point?
My initial thought was like, that looks really fun. And of course, like, you know, being in the therapy room can be fun, but it also can be really challenging and difficult. And the training to be a therapist can be extremely challenging as well. And I didn't expect, I guess, the amount of self-work. So yeah, it's definitely changed a lot. And I think the way that I see psychotherapy is always changing kind of every day with every client that I meet or every new space that I walk into. It kind of changes and shifts kind of how I reflect on things and reflect on our jobs and what we do in that room.
Thank you. And a question that I ask everybody in this podcast, what does being a UKCP member mean to you?
Being a UKCP member for me is, I guess, feeling a sense of trust and a sense of community and a sense of, I guess, respect for, you know, the training that I've done, the point in my career that I am in, and that there are other like-minded people around me that I have access to, and feeling that I'm not left alone as a therapist. You know, being a therapist can be a very lonely job at times, and it feels so much more reassuring to know that I have a body that stands behind me, that, you know, really kind of respects the amount of effort and time that goes into becoming a psychotherapist.
Thank you, that's great. And I want to talk a bit more about your career. Because after training, you started working with young people in Hackney. How did this come about and how did you find this role?
Yeah, it was actually one of my favorite jobs, and probably is still one of my favorite jobs, but also the most difficult, one of the most difficult. So my training was in child and adolescent psychotherapy, and initially I never ever wanted to work with adults. But before I got into the Hackney job, I was working in a school, and it was primary and secondary and sixth form all under one roof. And I just found that I really loved working with the older teenagers who were kind of about to embark on life and adulthood, and also the challenges that comes with that. And so I started to kind of look into working with young adults from age 16 to 25. And I was working in a charity which offered, I think it was like 12 to 24 sessions to young people in that area. And then the other thing for me was that I've always wanted to work with people who can't access therapy in the traditional way. Maybe they can't afford it or don't necessarily trust what therapy can do for them. And as a Black woman, I really wanted to show up and be in the places where there will be other Black female, Black male, Black non-binary people who can have access to a Black female therapist. And so working in Hackney, where it's so diverse, so multicultural, yeah, it was an amazing place to be, because I felt like actually my identity really meant a lot to some of the people that I was working with.
And you also created a mental health focused social media account back in 2019. What prompted you to do that?
Yeah, so working with young people in Hackney and absolutely loving the work, but knowing that 24 sessions will only go so far, and also that resources are really depleted in London and the UK. It's really hard for people to access therapy in the first place. I felt the one thing that everybody does have access to is a phone, and most people have access to the internet and social media, and it's absolutely free. So why don't we make therapy more accessible, or therapeutic lessons more accessible, by sharing free tips, free resources, little bits of psychoeducation? Why can't everybody know about what an attachment is? And why can't everybody know about the vagus nerve and, the importance of learning about the nervous system? Why can't we make that easy for everybody to know? It's like kind of lessons that I wish everybody had access to in school. So I started to kind of just share anxiety tips and all these little things, attachment, or even things about therapy, how to make the most of your therapy on Instagram. And it grew really quickly. And especially then when COVID hit, people were very anxious. And so I created a quite a large community on Instagram called Real Talk Therapist, where I continue to share self-love and healing tips and recommendations and book recommendations and stuff like that.
And have you been able to kind of look at the people who've engaged with that and see that it's reached people who may not have accessed that information or, might have been interested but didn't know where to start?
I get so many people who message me or comment on my post, and they say, I've been waiting for therapy, or I've been unsure about whether to start therapy, and your posts have been really helpful in the meantime while I'm deciding, or whilst I'm on a waiting list, like it's given me lots of tips and stuff that I can make use of. So there's been so much, I guess, of helping people bridge the gap between where they are in their lives and then actually getting them into a therapy room somewhere at some point.
You've now got over 50,000 followers, so you're an influencer on social. How have you kind of used your psychotherapy experience in that other space?
In the therapy room, you have that one person that you're, supporting, and you take in and hold all of their story. You probably don't even actually give that much tips or advice or recommendations here and there, but not loads. Whereas online, it's the reverse. I can't be there for every person's story, and actually, I don't encourage people to tell me their stories at all. If anything, I encourage them to share it in the comments where they can have a conversation with each other and have that kind of community building. I'm just holding the space almost as you would in a group. and I'm sharing resources so that they can, you know, kind of add fuel to their self-love and healing journeys.
Off the back of some of that book, you've now got a book deal. How did this kind of come about and how were you approached? And do you have any advice that you can share on this?
Yeah, it's a really interesting process because I was contacted probably in 2020, end of 2020. I was contacted by a publisher who said, have you ever thought about writing a book? I think you'd be great. We'd love to give you a book deal. And at the time, I was really grateful, but not ready. I think I was juggling too many plates and maybe I'd had to believe in myself a little bit more. And then a few more publishers contacted me. And again, I was like, oh, not sure yet, not sure yet. And then eventually, I think it was beginning of last year, 2022, that another publisher, I had a Zoom meeting with them and I really liked them. And it inspired me to get a book agent. You know, you write a proposal about what your book could be, and then your book agent will send that proposal out to lots of different publishers and they will decide if they would like to propose a book deal. And you then decide which publisher you want to go to, depending on the deal that they give you and, you know, whether you feel that they will really look after your book and understand your vision. So that's kind of the way to go about it. You can also go about it in terms of a publisher contacts you straight away and you go with them. But I think it's best to scope around and see who's the best fit. But yeah, that's kind of how it came about. And I think you asked me about tips for anybody that is wanting to write a book. I think it's a good idea just to obviously spend lots of time brainstorming and reading other books that inspire you. You know, I have always wanted to write. I've always wanted to write nonfiction specifically, and hopefully that will come in the future. But when I was working with young people, especially, I always had this feeling of like, I wish there was something I could give to them, like a book or a toolbox that they can just go away and have access to whenever they need it after therapy. That's what I want to create. I want to create a book that could be a toolbox for people who either are in therapy or have finished therapy or have never had therapy, but something where they're getting all the therapeutic lessons that I wish they'd had earlier on. I wanted to write a book for my previous clients, my current clients. I wanted to write a book for myself. So I think it's about thinking, what is the book that you'd want to read? What is missing from your bookshelf? And how would you voice that from yourself? And yeah, just having the right team around you as well is helpful.
So Tasha, can you tell us a little bit more about your book and what it's about?
So my book is called Real Talk, Therapy Lessons in Healing and Self-Love. And it's essentially full of lots of different things that we would typically learn in therapy, like boundaries and the impact of childhood, or even things like sex and grief and stress, and giving people the psychoeducation to understand, you know, what does that mean for them? How does it relate to their past and their past lessons and what they might need to unlearn? And giving them tips and resources and, you know, structures to help them make changes in their life. So I, you know, bring examples from my own life and lots of creative exercises that people can make use of to implement things straight away as well. So it's a very kind of informative, but also compassionate book that can be for anyone wherever they are on their therapy journey.
Alongside the social media work we talked about, you also have your private practice. Where does your income come from with so many followers and you've got book deals? How do you manage that?
Yeah, so I have quite a varied kind of income stream. So obviously I have my private practice, which I do for one day a week. And then obviously the book deal means that I got money in like four different installments. So you get a first installment when you sign your book deal, and then you get a second one when you hand in the manuscript, and then you get the third one when the book goes into the shops, and then the fourth one when it goes to paperback. When I'm on social media, then I often have lots of brands that want to work with me. So companies like could be anything. I've worked with like George Asda and Sky TV and Spotify. And these kind of brands, they would ask me to work with them either to create content online, which is about mental health or self-care and self-love, and kind of tying it in with their brand, whether it's like, I don't know, sharing, you know, my favorite TV shows that are about therapy and helping people understand themselves. Or they might ask me to do a talk or to do a panel or to do a workshop or meditation at an event. So there's lots of different spaces that I end up being in that are probably not very therapy centered, but I'm bringing the therapy or the therapeutic practice into the room in my own way. And I'm fully freelance now.
You know, the beauty of this podcast is to talk to so many people in different areas of psychotherapy with varied workloads and how they manage it. So it's really great to hear about all of the different things that you're doing. How do you ensure that boundaries and ethics are still maintained in your social media work?
Is that with clients or with myself or with the social media community? Or all of the above?
Good question. All of the above, because I think it can be applied to all of them. I guess looking at each of them differently, but how do you make sure that those boundaries are kept in place?
It's an interesting one with my clients, because actually most of them, let's say 90%, found me through Instagram. So they were very aware of my public account, you know, from the start. But it meant that when we first had our sessions, or even in that introductory session, we spoke about, you know, what was it like that I have a public profile and how would that be for you? And this is what you can expect. You know, I won't be communicating with you on Instagram, I won't be following you on Instagram. You're free to follow me if you want to, but there's absolutely no pressure. And we just have that kind of open conversation. And some follow me on Instagram and some choose not to. And we're able to talk about when things come up. And then in terms of, like, I guess my boundaries with them, it's that I don't contact them on social media. And if they ever do respond to me or message me on social media, I tend to then take it back to email or bring it up in the session. But I think it's been working for like 3 years now. So we have this rhythm of understanding of how we work together.
No, thank you for that, because I can imagine if someone's thinking about, you know, starting out on social media, there is that kind of, where do I start and what do I need to put in place? So yeah, that's really helpful.
And I was going to say that, you know, there's quite a few different therapists that I speak to online who are from the UK or from the US, and they all do it so differently. Like, you have your own discernment of how you want that to be. Some people might be listening to how I do it and be like, oh my gosh, that's definitely not my style. I don't want them to know anything about my life. Then that's fine. You know, you can, you know, create that boundary for yourself. And I kind of started my Instagram being very boundaried, where I never showed my face. It was just infographics and information, but never showing my face or really saying my name, or it was just an account and not a person behind it. And then I started to change things and realized actually that doesn't fit where I am anymore. And for me to take off my career in the way that I want it to, I want to be authentic and I want to show a little bit of who I am. So, you know, allow yourself to kind of create one boundary and then play around with it and see if it still fits.
What was the thing that made you start training? I know we talked about why you wanted to be a therapist, but what was the point where you were like, this is it, I'm going to train in child and adolescent psychotherapy?
When I had this idea that I'd be a therapist, I went to uni, I did a psychology degree. And after that, I wasn't sure, you know, it doesn't teach you much about psychotherapy. I think it's like one module, but I wasn't sure if I wanted to work with children or adults. I knew that I definitely wanted to start ASAP. I think I felt kind of eager to be in the world of psychotherapy and the mind and helping people. After I finished uni, I started volunteering, and I had two volunteering jobs. One was with Samaritans, being a listener on the phone, with adults who were distressed. And then the second one was to work with a charity that did kind of play therapy style interventions in schools, in primary schools. And I did both for like a year or a year and a half. And from there, I was like, do you know what? The child work made me really excited and want to know more. I felt like we all have an inner child within us anyway. So if I did a training in working with children in a way, I could, you know, connect with most people and their inner children as well. And then I traveled for a bit. And then when I came back from traveling, I was definitely ready because I'd had all this headspace and reflection of being curious about myself that I thought, actually, I think I want to do this now on a deeper level and start this training.
And looking back now, is there anything you wish you knew before you started training?
I wish I knew so many things. I wish I knew how expensive it is. When you first sign up and you see the fees, that's one thing. But then you realize that there's so many more additional fees that aren't on that piece of paper, you know, thinking about supervision costs and the cost of books and residentials, and there's just so many more costs than I expected. And I think I wasn't prepared for it at all. And then also time. My course was designed as a part-time course, but with full-time demands. And I definitely didn't expect how much time it would be and take and energy.
And how did you manage that, balancing the time, the money aspect, those practical pieces of the training?
The way that I had to do it was I had to kind of go into a bit of survival mode. I didn't have finances set up for the training. I was only 24, 23. So I had to work full time throughout the whole 5 years, which was really, really hard, really excruciating. From year three to year five, we was in placements. So really, I was working 5 days a week, in placement for one day a week, and then I have one day off a week. And sometimes that day would be taken up with workshops. So it was really, really exhausting. But that's the only way that I would have been able to get it done. Hats off to people who do the training when they have children and full-time jobs and, you know, are carers, and it's really tough. So, you know, hats up to anybody who's listening and has that experience currently.
And what advice would you give to someone who might be thinking about training as a psychotherapist or a psychotherapeutic counselor?
Really hold on to your why. There's going to be lots of times when you feel tested or challenged. Maybe you're going to think, oh my gosh, is this really for me? Do I even know what I'm doing? Or I'm fed up of all of this stuff. Like, you know, there's going to be so many times when you feel really challenged and you just want the course to be over. But if you can like write down why you want to do this, and have that somewhere that you can keep coming back to. It might be on a mirror, it might be in a notebook, it might be on your phone, but just to have that thing as a constant reminder to send to you. The other thing I would say is, and it sounds really obvious, but it's not, really make use of the people that you're training with. There's nobody else that will be able to relate to your experience than the people that you're actually training with. So really kind of put time, if you can, into even just one person, two people in your course that you can really get to know, spend a little bit of time with outside of the course time. Being a therapist can be very lonely. So collect the colleagues while you can, I think is really important.
Thank you. And my final question, but it's a big one. How has psychotherapeutic training changed you?
Oh, yeah, it's a big question. It changed me in so many ways. I think in ways that I wanted but didn't always expect would happen. So it obviously made me delve very deeply into myself to understand what is my story, what are my needs, what are my boundaries, to really understand me as a person outside of who I am at work or who I am with my family, you know, just see me as an individual. And obviously, like personal therapy was a big part of that. You know, you have to have personal therapy whilst training, and it's great that we have to. The other thing that I think it change within me is, I guess, understanding what it means to help. I think a lot of people, including myself, come into the career of psychotherapy wanting to rescue and help or be a bit of a superhero of shutting down all the problems of the world. And I think training to be a therapist is very quick in humbling you in that it's never possible to do that, and actually that's about you, not about the people that you're trying to help. So it really helped me to define what does it mean to be a therapist, to help someone on a journey, and you know, what's the most authentic way of doing that.
Thanks, Tasha, that's great. The other things that have come out for me in this podcast is really about growth and development, and that that's going to be something that keeps happening and your career is going to go in different ways. So I wish you all of the best with your book, and thank you very much for speaking to us today.
Thank you.
That was UKCP's psychotherapist Tasha Bailey speaking to Helen Willingham, our head of content and engagement. If you're interested in exploring therapy, then you can visit our psychotherapy training page, where you can find information on psychotherapy as a career, as well as the different training pathways available to you. Just go to www.psychotherapy.org.uk/psychotherapy-training. All episodes of My Psychotherapy Career are available on our website, psychotherapy.org.uk. You can also subscribe to our channel, UKCP, on your favourite streaming platform. Do you have any feedback you'd like to share with us on this episode, or any from our series? Get in touch with us at communications@ukcp.org.uk. Join us again next month. Till then, thank you for listening and take good care of yourselves.